Okay, so I wanted just to discuss a little bit more what we were discussing last time. So this was in the end of the in the back of the sefer. He has a tshuva about achdus, and it was in response to a question from a priest about the idea of achdus in the Torah. So the priest had asked him the question from the pasuk. The pasuk in Tehillim says, "Kel Elokim Hashem Dibir VaYikra Aretz." So that was the priest's question. It says three shemos of Hashem: Kel, Elokim, and the shem of Ayah. And it says Dibir VaYikra Aretz. So the priest said that sounds like three. Right? You know, the priest is always interested in looking for references to three, and. And that was his question. So the Rashba wants to explain that pasuk, because there's a medrash that says, "With those three midos, God created the world." So he wants to explain what that means. So the Rashba explained like this. He says there is the mida of there's the midas hadin. Right, that's always with shame. That's with shame. No, din is Elokim, right? Because the word Elokim means power and sovereignty, right? Nasati l'cho Elohim l'faro. I made you a sovereign to Paro, or. We say the judges in the Parshas Mishpatim says Yavo Elohim, right? You go to the judges. So that term is even in Lashon Chol. It means like a judge, a master, an authority. So that's the Midas Hadin, and then Midas Arachamim is the Shem Havaya. So he says, but there's also a third Midah, that's the mixture between the two. So basically, he says because you can't have the two coexist without some mixture of the two. Okay, so we were trying to, we just wanted to go a little further into understanding this idea. So he elaborates a little more. He says like this. He says, this is what the Medrash means, that the world was created with these three midos. He says, because da ki e efshar li olam lios omed al shleimuso v'al hakavana shenivra be'echad mishtei hamidos harishonos levad. Says it's impossible for the world to exist, to stand on its perfection, al shleimuso, and on the intent of its creation, if you only had midas hadin or midas harachamim. It's not possible with either Midas Hadin alone or Midas Harachamim for the world to continue in its to exist with its intended purpose. Why?
This, by the way, when he's answering.
So he said like this, because Midas Hadin, the world would not be able to exist for one moment, right? Because there's no tzaddik. Ain tzaddik v'aris sheyasa tov lo yechta. Nobody ever existed that didn't sin, didn't fail. And with you, if you had pure midas hadin, then once there's a chait, there will be destruction. Person would be his existence would be removed. So if you had the world, running with only midas hadin, it wouldn't last very long. The whole world would be shomem, he says. But, and if you had just midas harachamim, absolute midas harachamim, then everything would be equal. There would be no difference between a good person and a bad person. Because that's what midas harachamim means. It means that there's a certain overlooking the person's failings. So Midas HaRachamim, he says, is mechaper al hakol. So if you had that, if you had midas harachamim, then it would be mizvatel kavonas habriyah shenivru hanivroim lavos Hashem yisbarach v'livchor batov v'limos barah. So if you had pure midas harachamim, then there'd be no check on a person's behavior, and the wicked would there'd be no difference between the tov and the ra. And then what would fail? The kavona of the bria would fail, because there'd be no schar v'onesh. Basically, that schar v'onesh, ultimately people would not continue searching for God, and the whole world would just be would devolve into pre-Noach time or something like that. You know, there's no mishpat, there's no din. E efshar lios lo amida al hakavana ha amita shnivro aleha ad shiyivro b'mida klula mishtei amida. So that's his point. His point is, there's midas hadin. Midas hadin is completely unforgiving. Any failure would require a retribution and destruction. Midas harachamim is all forgiving, and then there'd be no schar v'onesh. So you can't have the world as we know it without a mixture of the two. Okay. And what is the mixture of the two? That's what he calls kale. He calls that kale. That means laharich apov berachamov lechote ula yoshev rafilo. That midas harachamim, the mixture of midas hadin and midas harachamim, means that now there'll be erech apayim. There'll be long suffering for the chote, that perhaps he'll do tshuva. But if he doesn't, vodenu lo yoshev ye'anesh b'zeh, then he'll be punished. Ze emes ze nachon. So Elokim is midas hadin gemura, Hashem is midas harachamim gemura, and kale is the midah klula umezuga. And that's why he says when in the Navi in Tehillim says Kaili Kaili lo mazavtani. Kaili is the references to Kaili, kale. That's the midah that really is a mixture of the two. And then he just goes on to say, he says sometimes it doesn't always mention all three, but it's obvious that you can't have one alone, you can't have both together because they're opposite, so there must be a middle midah. But we wanted to try to elaborate on this idea if we could. Because midas hadin and midas harachamim is something we're always familiar with. We're always discussing it. It's full of the whole tefillos and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur are filled with the idea that with midas hadin, midas harachamim. And the Rashba seems to be introducing an interesting idea of this that we can't ever have real midas hadin or real midas harachamim. We're really always working with a mixture of the two. Yeah. Okay. So what's right? So what is it? So it's just kale then is the question here. It's not really Elokim, Hashem, and kale. Right. Because he says we don't really have Elokim, that's pure din. We don't really have Shem Avaya, that's pure rachamim. We have kale. Right.
So that's the only thing we're asking about.
So is that the only thing then? So why doesn't it always just say kale?
Uh-huh.
Right, and that's what he says. He says Kaili Kaili Lama Zavtani. Ain Omrim Lumidas Hadin Lama Zavtani. Ulakavana Hazos tries to work it out. Omru b'medra shabara karsh baruch hu esalomo bishalosh midos. How? This is addressing your question. She'i efshar bilti ze. It's impossible otherwise.
Impossible to do
without
the three?
It's impossible without the three. And he says later on, also, he says, that's why it says, he says like this. In this pasuk, where it's counting both, it's counting kale, it's counting Hashem and Elokim. He says, "Lo Eloi Hoya be'efshar limnos hashtayim ulaniach hashlishus." Ki e efshar lishtei hamidos, ratzlom hamidos rachamim hamidos hadin liskabetz biachad. It's not possible for the midos hadin and the midos rachamim to really join together. Shelo tisyalid mi bineim hamida mizduga klula mishteim behechrach, without producing this third midah that's in the middle. So, I mean, the basic answer to your question is that he's saying the idea of kale is really not a separate idea from din and rachamim. Right? It means it's like how the din and the rachamim work together, how they work out. But I just wanted to see if we could understand a little bit more about what does he mean about this idea of din. So that was the other question we were asking last. We were asking sort of the opposite question last time, but same question. I mean, so what do we mean by really midas hadin and midas harachamim? This is then like a third thing. It's like it's not really din. It's not really rachamim. It's like a third thing. So how does he work it out that it's really? I mean, in the one hand, he's saying there's no such thing as there's absolute din, there's absolute rachamim, and it's not possible to put them together. But on the other hand, he's saying now you're having this. That's okay if we call it like a third meter, that's a combination of the two. So what is the combination of it? What kind of an idea of that is that? And in general, what do we mean by these midos? You know? In general, what do we mean by the midos? Right? It's not like two forces battling it out. It's not like God's tough and kind, and he's gentle and in the middle, and that's like all these human descriptions. What do we really mean by this? Okay, so I think what he's trying to say is important. I think what he's trying to say is like this. What do we mean by the midos? I mean, what do we mean by the midos? In general, what do we mean by the midos? We really just mean the way that God judges the universe, the way God Maisei Hashem, right? Like the Yud Gimel Midos is just the way that God rules the Maisei Hashem, right? It's just a description of Maisei Hashem. We use terms that if a king were doing that, we would call him merciful, or if a king were doing that, we'd call him angry, right? It's just descriptions from our perspective of you have to interpret it into human terms, but we know it's not those human. It's not a source. The source of the action is not the same source as the human emotions of kindness and mercy and things like that. So what do we really mean then? So I think what he says is, I think what he means is like this. There's a certain. Is there a real truth to this idea of midas hadin? Is there a real truth to this idea of midas harachamim? Or do they simply not exist? And all we really have is this midah klula. Is there some reality to the absolute midas hadin? And is there some reality to the absolute midas harachamim? And is there some reality to this third thing? I mean, where is this midas hadin, the midas harachamim? If we only have the midah klula, so then essentially there is no midas hadin. There is only this middle midah. Like your question, right? So the thing is like this: we look at God as the borei, okay, and we say like this: there is. We can see about bria. About the creation, we can say two things about the creation. We can say there is a certain good in existence. Okay, God is a borei, and as the concept of borei is to bring things, to give existence to be the mamtzi kol nimtzo. Right, this is like we were discussing last year in the Mora, that the Rambam says he doesn't believe that there's that everything in the universe is designated for man necessarily. Even everything on the planet, he doesn't think is designated for man's purpose. He says there are those people who believe everything has to result in a benefit to man, and man is like the ultimate purpose of creation, and everything has to serve him somehow. The Rambam says he doesn't believe that idea. He says there were Chachamim who did believe that, and that's what we were discussing last year. If you remember in the Mora, there are, in the Sefer Mitzvot, he seems to embrace that, and in the Mora, he seems to reject that. But the point was, the Rambam's ultimate idea was that there's a purpose to creation. What is the purpose to creation? That it is good, existence is good. Existence is, you can't ask beyond that. You can't ask beyond what's the purpose of this, the purpose of this. Ultimately, you're going to have to get to the point where you're going to say, the purpose of all creation is that it should exist. That was God's will that it should exist. And it doesn't have to exist for something else. Okay? Because no matter what you're going to say, you're ultimately going to have to come down to something. You can play that for a while. You can say, this exists for this, for this, for this, for this. Ultimately, you're going to have to come to something where you say, and that exists for, and there's nothing else. Right? So you have to say, even if you can choose man as the ultimate existence and say, you know, the animals are for man, and this is for the animals, so the animals can be for man, and this is for this, and this, you know. But ultimately you're going to get to man, you're going to say, what's man for? And you're going to have to say, that's just the will of God, that there should be an existence like this. Okay, so the Rambam therefore held it's not proper, it doesn't make sense to try to, there's no need, I should say, to try to find a reason for everything that it serves some existence that ultimately serves man. Because once you get to man, you're going to have to say that there's just a purpose in creation that God as a Bore, the Ratzon Hashem, the Chochmas Hashem, is a certain reality that existence is the will of God, and therefore the good itself is the existence. Vayarlikim Kitov. Kitov is the existence itself. So therefore, we'll say that you could say about everything that God's will is that all various forms of all manners of existence should be, right? So the point I'm trying to make over here is that there's a certain idea of existence itself, that God as the Bore manifests a certain concept, a certain idea that there's a good of existence. Now, of course, for man's existence to be complete, he has to exist like man. So that's why we're always striving to exist like a person, because that's what we are. We are people, and the existence itself is the good. So for us to actualize our Tzelem Elokim really makes us truly exist, and that brings us in line with the whole purpose of creation. That has to do with the other quotes we did with the Rashba, where he says that God is mispalel, right? Because there's a certain idea that when man exists properly, he's perfecting creation, and that itself is God's will. That there should be existence. That's why the Rashba has an agadita that says that God is mispalel too, and he prays that the Jews should be, that his midas harachamim should overcome his midas kas. But he interprets it to mean that there is a certain purpose in creation, that man should exist properly, and therefore. That's expressed in the idea that when the Jews live according to the Torah, they are really fulfilling the whole purpose of creation. So that's the moshul, is that God is mispalel. You know, because being mispalel represents a purpose that you want to be fulfilled. So the point is that there is a certain good in existence. Okay. But there's also a purpose to the creation. Okay? So the Rashba is expressing, saying those two ideas are expressed in Midas HaDin and Midas HaRachamim. Midas HaRachamim is the idea that existence itself is good. Okay? Existence itself is good. That's expressed by Rachamim. But Din expresses the idea that it's not just existence, there's a certain purpose to the existence. You understand? So the Rashba is explaining like this. He's saying, what do we mean when we reference Din and Rachamim? And we say that the world can't exist with either one. It means to say that there is a certain idea of existence alone, as there's a certain, objectively stated, we could say there's a certain purpose of existence, because you can't go beyond that. There's nothing you can go beyond. You can't say, and why should there be existence? So ultimately speaking, when we're referencing the Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a Bore, all we can say is that there's an idea of God being a Mamsi Kol Nimtza. There's an idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Bore, being the Mamsi Kol Nimtza. Absolutely, there should be existence. Unconditionally, there should be existence. That's a certain idea of Rachamim. You understand? And that's what he's saying. With Midas HaRachamim, there'd be no, the existence would continue. There'd be no judgment, there'd be no destruction, there'd be no intervention. It says, but that ignores another ideal. There's another competing idea, and that is that the existence, that at least with man, there's a certain purpose of his existence. And his existence, he really is only truly existing when he fulfills a certain ideal. You understand? For other things, you could say there's just pure existence. There's nothing to talk about. But with man, the existence of man itself is only validated because of an objective that man fulfills in recognizing God. Because that really is man's existence. Without man recognizing how he's here, without man recognizing the Creator, then he's not really man, because he's not existing with the reality of his mind. He's not existing with the reality of his Tzelem Elokim. It's easier for an animal to exist because there's only one plane that they're existing on. But for man to truly exist, he needs to fulfill a certain purpose. He needs to, not because there's a purpose, you understand? Not because God needs man to recognize him. Not because God feels good when man praises him, but because that is man's existence. Without man recognizing God, then he's not engaging his Tzelem Elokim. He's not engaging his intellect. He's not living on the higher plane of existence of a metaphysical reality that is man's existence. So it's a very important point, and so it's a little subtle, but the point is, when we say that man has a purpose to recognize God, there's no purpose beyond that. You understand? We can't say, and why does God care that man recognize him? Right? What is being fulfilled by recognizing God? This is the subtle point. Nothing other than man existing as man. Just like, why do the stellar nebulae exist millions of light years away from us? Because that's considered good to exist. That's their existence. God as the Bore gives existence to all forms of possible existence. That's what the Rambam says in the Gemara. That itself is the idea of God. That's tied up with the idea of God. And just like you can't ask what's the purpose, the Rambam says it's just haughty for man to believe things that are millions and trillions of years of miles away from him has to do with us. Right, that's what the Rambam says. He's right. He says there are people who try to find that was really tied up with the old idea, the old physics. You know, it's an amazing thing that even the Rambam had, even though he had that old physics where they believed the Earth was the center, he still didn't believe the idea that things that were so far away from us have anything to do with us. He says there's no reason to say, to try to figure out, what is that star benefiting us? No, that star is existing because existence is good. You have to find a purpose for that star? Well, what's the purpose for you? Right? You're not going to find a purpose for you. So ultimately everything is equal in the sense that we say existence itself is the will of God. But here's the point that we're trying to make. For a star to exist, it doesn't have to do anything. But for man to exist, he has to fulfill a certain... He has to be able to exist as man. Man doesn't exist as an animal, and he only truly exists when he's engaging his telemelchim. So in that sense, we can say that there's a purpose for man to recognize God, but the purpose really just fulfills his own existence. Because without him recognizing God, he's really just living like an animal. And when we say it's good for all forms of existence to be actual, so man's very existence to be actual is to be a creature that engages its telemelchim and recognizes God. So I think that's what the Rashba is trying to. I think that's what the Rashba is expressing over here. He's saying, what do we mean by Midas HaDin? What do we mean by Midas HaRachamim? We really mean two things. We really are trying to express the idea of existence, and express the idea that God is the Bore, the Ratzon Hashem, and the Chochmas Hashem, is that there should be existence. Existence itself is the good. And we can't go and ask purpose. Ultimately, we're going to have to get down to an idea of existence. And Midas HaRachamim expresses the idea that there's unconditionally existence is good. But Midas HaDin is explaining that for man, man is only existing when his purpose is being fulfilled. Those are the two absolute ideas. It says, but in reality, the only way that we can validate the existence that we have is finding the measure where we can say that, like he says, that there's an erech apayim lechote ulay yoshev. But if he doesn't, he has to be punished. So it means to say there has to be, in reality, you have to find the measure where you can say the existence is validated because it contains the ability of man to perfect himself. You understand? In reality, we're looking for existence. But man's existence is really only true when he perfects himself and he recognizes who he is. He recognizes his place in the universe, and he recognizes the Bore. But in fact, we see the Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that it's a mixture of the two, in the sense that we're looking for both to be expressed. We're looking for the existence with the possibility of the purpose. That's the Midas Kale. But in reality, there really are two objective expressions over here of the good. One is existence itself alone, but the other is that in terms of man, it's only if he has a purpose. It's only if he fulfills the purpose. Now, God doesn't demand that you live. God doesn't demand. Full Midas HaDin would say, if you don't exist with the purpose, you don't have the right to exist at all. Meaning, if you're not in the process of perfection itself, then you don't have the right to exist. That would be real. That would be strict Midas HaDin, right? Well, we don't have strict Midas HaDin. We have the idea that the world is validated. The world, at least the human existence, is validated and is allowed to continue as long as there still exists within it the possibility of man reaching a perfection. And that's really what's expressed in Avraham's discussion about Sodom, you know. How many tzaddikim are here? You know, what is the possibility of this kind of this civilization to reach a to reach some sort of perfection. You know what I mean? Or like with Noach. I'm going to give the land, I'm going to give another 120 years to see what the possibility is. So that's really what he's trying to express. Trying to express with these three midos, we see that there really is no separate midos. And that's what we always believe, ultimately. There's no such thing as actual midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But this whole idea of analyzing it from two objective perspectives and finding the middle is really a description of creation and the sort of the definition of the existence of this world. And we'll say that we could say there are three. We could put it in this way. We could say there's an objective of creation. There's an objective. There's a certain objective just of existence. Man's existence, though, that's what he's referring to as rachamim. But with pure rachamim, you would not have the idea of man existing as man, because he would never fulfill his purpose. Right. So there has to be din, because without the purpose of man's existence, he's really not existing as man. The only thing is, we don't demand. God does not demand of creation, does not require of creation in order to exist the actuality of man's fulfilling his perfection, only the possibility of man fulfilling his perfection. That's the mida klula. You understand? So it's not really three different things. It's really one description of God as the Bore in reference to the universe, in reference to the human existence, actually. Right? That there is a good to the existence. That good is dependent on man's perfection. But that doesn't mean that without perfection, man doesn't have the right to exist. Man has the right to exist provided his existence is tilted towards perfection, or provided that he has the ability to reach the perfection. And that's exactly what he means, that God is marich apav berachamav lachote ula yashuv. But if there wasn't any idea of ula yashuv, then there'd be no right to existence at all. I mean, in terms of Sodom, it's a possible interpretation of that. I'm not saying, yeah. I mean, I've heard that before, that's what he was wondering about. And it was what validates the existence of a society. If you have a certain amount of tzaddikim, we always say a tzaddik has an influence on the place. And the question is, a place like Sodom, how, you know, what if there was a certain amount of tzaddikim remaining? Would that still maintain a certain possibility of correction in some point? That's definitely expressed by Noah, right? The extension of 120 years to see if they will give them a chance to correct themselves. But I'm not saying that's necessarily the idea by Sodom, but that, I think, is an interpretation of that. Just to get back to the idea we were discussing before, say when man is living the life of Torah, what do we mean that he's really existing? I mean, you know, if you poke a Russia, your finger's not going to go through him. He's really there. Right? Like, he's really, really there. Everybody's really there. So what do you mean he's really existing? Yeah. Is it just that he's fulfilling his purpose? That's the question. Is he fulfilling his purpose? So that's exactly what I'm trying to explain. When we say that a person is who's living the life of Torah or the life of Chochmah is fulfilling his purpose, it's not. We don't mean to say, and therefore he has the right to exist even in the Midas HaDin. We don't mean to say that it's like a reward for fulfilling your purpose. Like, if you're being a good person, you're being good, you're doing good things, so therefore you deserve a reward to exist. We mean to say that man as a creature is nase Adam, right? Says Is that oh, that was something else, isn't it? Right, it says in Bereshis, Naaseh Adam, let us make man. Right, so what is the Rashi saying? What does it mean, Naaseh, let us? God is talking to. So the Mefarshim say means that man is like a combination of the two existences that preceded him, the physical of the animals and the malachim. Right, so Naaseh means like a combination of from a combination of these things. So it means to say that man is not an existence that is animal, not an existence that is sikhli. Man is a combination of the two. But like the Rambam says, in that sense, what distinguishes man from animal is a seichel. So there's a certain element of seichel, of soul in man. So if a man just lives a life like an animal, he never engages his mind and he never thinks about things and never perceives reality beyond the physical, then he's really just existing like an intelligent animal. Right? In order to exist like man, you have to exist with the faculty that differentiates you from animal. Right? So when you live the life that engages the mind, and that's your that's the world that you really perceive as true, then we can say now you're living properly like a man lives. You understand? Now you're really living the life of a person, because the life of a person is a life in the reality of the intellect. Otherwise, you're just a very clever animal, like a nachash. Could be a very there could be animals that are very, very clever. Nachash is a very clever animal. But what differentiates the cleverness of an animal from the from man is that you really perceive a completely different reality beyond the physical. Clever animal means they perceive the physical and they have a brain power to manipulate and figure out how to get out of the physical what they want. Right? Making tools, animals make tools. Right? You ever see the monkey stick the stick in the ant hole and pull out the lollipop with the ants on it, right? So they make tools. They're always finding more things that the animals can do, but they're not perceiving a different reality. They're not perceiving a reality beyond the physical. Right? That's the faculty of man. That's what makes man live. That's when in other words, unless a man is engaging those ideas, then his intellect is really never actualized. It's just what they call potential. So he's not existing with both components of man. He's only existing physically with maybe the possibility of engaging his soul, engaging his neshama, engaging the faculty that perceives beyond the physical. Only when man is perceiving the ideas of God and the ideas of metaphysics can you say that he's really existing as man, because only when that faculty is actualized can you say that it's real. It's to say that a man has a soul that's potentially could, ideas that you potentially could have aren't actual. You only can say that they're actual when you're perceiving and living in that reality. Right? That's like that whole complicated thing with the Rambam. Right, David? The intelligence and the intelligible. That only when man is really perceiving ideas is his soul active. Because what is the activity of the soul? Perceiving ideas. And what is an idea? It's something that the soul is perceiving. So you can't really say the person has an active soul unless it is perceiving ideas. You could have a sleeping soul, but you can't really say that his nefesh or his neshama, whichever word you the nefesh, I think, around use that has an existence. But I can have a physical body, whether I'm moving things or not moving things, because it's just material. It's composed of material. But the seichel, the seichel is really a capacity to perceive ideas, and the neshama is a certain faculty that can perceive those ideas. And really, only while it's perceiving, does it have any? Is it considered to be active? There's no meaning to it unless it's perceiving ideas. It's a little bit difficult, but the point is, without man perceiving the deeper realities, he's really just, all we can say about his existence is, all that is actual about his existence is his guf. There's no actuality to the component of the soul. But when man is existing and perceiving concepts, I don't mean that he's thinking about ideas all day. I mean, say, just his orientation of reality is the most basic question of existence. What does he perceive to be the good? You know, the old question. That is a very big element of that is an actuality of your soul. When you look around and all you're after is pleasure or kavod, that's really very, that's basically rooted in the emotions and the physical. If you perceive that there's a greater purpose, there's a greater reality beyond these things, and these things are not really what the true good is to man, then you have a different orientation of your reality, and then that stems from a certain recognition of God and a certain recognition of what man is. That already is an actualized concept. That's a concept you live with. That's what we mean by your soul being actualized. Then you're existing as man. Then you are really existing as man, because now you have existing in reality a certain element of concepts, which stems from the soul and is really the actualization of the soul. But other than that, you're really living like an animal. So that's what we mean when I say that he's living like man. It means to say that the element of his nefesh is actualized, and now both components are real. Both components are existing, as opposed to a person who doesn't engage ideas. He never really actualizes his nefesh. He might be clever and work use his brain power to get out of the world the good that he perceives, the physical good, but he's not qualitatively viewing reality differently. That really requires engaging the soul. Until man does that, he's a very complex animal. Until he goes beyond that, he has to go beyond that to really exist in a different realm. It's interesting, like we say, like the Navi sometimes say like the Navi is called like a Shota. Because the average person looks at him and he seems like a fool. Because he's living on a different plane. He's perceiving a different reality. He's not doing things that anybody recognizes as making sense, because he's perceiving different truths. He's perceiving truths that to the average person seems like a crazy behavior. When you take an average person who's just chasing money and fame, and you make a decision that's rational, they'll think you're crazy. You're going to give that up so you can study? Well, that doesn't make any sense. You know, you're going to make less money so you can learn more? This doesn't make any sense. This doesn't compute. But that's the idea of here. But the point that he's making is the Mida Klula means it recognizes that there's a good to existence, but the true existence is only with the purpose. But the actual existence doesn't demand the purpose itself. It only demands that there still be the possibility of fulfilling the purpose. Right? I think it's a good way to look at it, because you can't have these battling midos. Right? Yeah, just to mention, you weren't here last time, but just to mention, it was a beautiful idea. He says, what does it mean when it says in the tefillah, we say it, that your midas harachamim should overcome your midas kas? So he says, all that really means is that man should live in a way that they validate their existence. In other words, when does God's midas harachamim overcome his midas kas? When the people are living in the proper way. It's not like a tefillah that God should... one midah should overpower the other. It's a tefillah that recognizes that we strive to exist in a way that in reality the balance is in our favor. Meaning, say that in reality, like he's explaining here, that in reality we're existing in a way that we still retain that the idea of perfection. Because what does it mean that the Midas Rachman overcomes the Midas Kas? It means to say that there still exists within reality, that man is expressing in reality the idea of the purpose of existence. So, it really means to say, because that's what the Gemara says. That's what God is Mispalo. He prays to himself that his Midas HaRachamim should overcome his Midas Kas. He says, what does that mean? It means to say, it's expressing the idea that when does God's Midas Rachamim overcome his Midas Kas? It's not like a thing like he just decides what to do. It means to say when the Klal Yisrael is living in a way that expresses the idea of purpose in the universe, then they validate their existence. Then that is the expression of Midas Rachamim overcome Midas Kas. So God's tefillah is basically expressing the idea that the will of creation is such that man should exist in a way that he's expressing his purpose. I mean, it's not like he's davening to himself that his split personality should shift, to kindness. That's apikursis. Right? The rachamim and the kas are an expression of the idea of
man's behavior.
Correct.
Like his
I was just discussing the question of Paro. Did he ever do tshuva? So you'll say up so that all the time, even the times when he says that he was a sinner, he says Nivani Vami Achotim, right? And he says he seems to recognize God. He says Hashem is a tzaddik and we're wrong. So you say, okay, fine, but in the end he didn't let them go, right? But what about in the 10th Makkah? He finally let them go. Right, I mean, doesn't that represent you?
Finally recognized God. Like, I'm saying, probably during the first 9 Makos, maybe he didn't believe that the God was actually the true God,
Right, but what you said before is good. Let's start with that. Isaac is saying that the question is, what does it mean that God hardened his heart? So some say it means that in the face of the Makkah, he would not have been able to have free will. Right?
Yeah.
So even if he was an absolute Rasha, torture works, basically. Right? Torture works. And ultimately, a person's going to give up. But that doesn't represent their will. That doesn't represent what they... right. So then you can work out... Then the pshat is good. Because at the 10th Makkah, it simply was... There was no hardening of his heart. But the letting of the Jews go didn't represent the tshuva. Right? Now, if you're gonna say that the phenomenon of being mechazek his lev is giving him free will, right? And that's what's required for tshuva. So then, the fact on the 10th Makkah there was no chizik lev to withstand the Makkah. And that's why he let the Jews go. That doesn't mean that he did tshuva. It just means to say he had no choice anymore. Right? So then you could say he never did tshuva. And that would be a good answer. But the Rambam doesn't have that answer. The Rambam seems to say, he says that Vayechazek Hashem, the idea of Chizek Lev is to take away his ability to do tshuva. That's what the Rambam says.
Yeah, but
Ram says that Paro was such a rasha, he lost his right to do tshuva. And that's why, and sometimes a person is such a sinner that the onesh that he deserves is destruction in his rishas. And but sometimes the onesh, as it's being implemented, it would seem, would cause him to do tshuva because he recognizes that he's wrong. So he has to have the ability of tshuva is removed, and that's what happened with Paro. That's what Ram says in Hilchos Tshuva. Is that the chizik, when it says Vayechazek Hashem as Leif Paro, it means to say he took away his ability to do tshuva. But that implies, and then the Ram says, so why did Hashem keep sending Moshe to tell Paro to let the Jews go if he knew he wouldn't? He says it was to demonstrate this idea itself. That when God takes away your ability to do tshuva, no matter how great the impetus, you're not able to do it. But that implies that letting the Jews go would be tshuva. Right? So then at the last makkah, he let them go. So the whole plan was very nice, but the last makkah, finally, it seems like he had to do tshuva. See, the pasuk says that after they left, so Hashem tells Moshe to turn, to double back towards Pi Hachiros, right? Lefnei Baal Tzifon, and to camp over there. And then he says, and Paro is going to say they're mixed up. Sogar Aleihem Amidbar. They don't know their way around. They're trapped. And then he says, V'chizakti Eslev Paro, V'rodaf Acharem. So that's where the Chizak Lev comes in.
He told that to Moshe.
That's what he tells Moshe. And then the next pasuk says that happened. Vayugad l'melech v'tzrayim ki vorach ha'om. Vayehofech levav Paro v'avodov el ha'om. And their heart switched. Vayamru mazos asinu kishalachnu es Yisrael me'avdeina. What have we done? Right? And then they got ready and they chased them out. V'chazek Hashem eslev Paro. So I would say like this. In other words, it would seem like this, that there was a chizuk lev for the first 9 makos
immediately,
so that he didn't have any tshuva to let the Jews go. But that was in order to man laharbos osos umofsai. You had to have many, many makos. But even when he let the Jews out, that didn't represent a tshuva. Why? Because what is tshuva? What is tshuva? What are the elements of tshuva? First is Aziva Sachet. So you could say that's what letting the Jews go was. Now, there was a certain idea of Aziva Sachet. You have to stop doing the chet. That's the first step in tshuva. So it would seem that when Paro let the Jews go, at that point, that was Aziva Sachet. Right? That wasn't Aziva Sachet. That was the first step of tshuva. Because without discontinuing the action of the sin, there's no possibility of tshuva. So the hardening of the heart for the first 9 makos was on the aziva sachet of the tshuva. But on the 10th maka, he was allowed aziva sachet, but he didn't have the charata, and he didn't have the idea of recognizing what he did was wrong. And then when he saw that they were still, that he had the possibility that they were really in a dangerous situation or in a vulnerable situation, the lack of aziva sachet, you know, brought back his the lack of charata brought back the it showed he wasn't, the aziva sachet itself was not really a full tshuva, is not a full tshuva. And when he saw that they were nevuchim ba'aretz, then he had a change of heart. See, and then the chizuk lev attached itself to that element, to the element of not allowing him to really recognize that letting them go was really the right thing to do. And Rashi says it was sort of a trap. It's very interesting, and this is what the Ran mentions. I mentioned last week. He says, why did they camp by Pi Hachiros, by Baal Tzifon? He says, because that was, the Medrash says, that was the one Avodah Zarah that wasn't destroyed. He says that God destroyed all the Avodah Zarahs in Mitzrayim, except for that one. So he says it gave Paro the idea that maybe there's some reality to this idol, and it's really preventing the Jews from leaving. So it really did not allow him. You know, sometimes Azivas Achet is the first step. And then once you're in Azivas Achet, sometimes things look differently when you're not involved in it, and you have the ability to reflect and look back. But over here, that was not given to him. Because it's true he had the Azivas Achet, but there was already in line something to allow him immediately to fix his mind on and start regretting the Azivas Achet. That's like we say that anyone who does good things and then is toha ala rishonos, he regrets all the good that he did, as the Ram says in Tshuva, then all of those mitzvahs that he did are true from Bilafanov. They're all just considered worthless. So really, that's really what happened to Paro. He's allowed to have the Azivas Achet, but then he was not given the ability to reflect on it. Immediately, he was drawn back in to the very idea of the Chet, with this idea of the Baal Tzifon and the idea of Nevuchim Heim Baaretz, and then he became the Toa Rishonos. He had charata on the Azivas Achet immediately, and then the Chizik Lev locked onto that mindset. But so that's the point. The point is letting the Jews go, like you were saying, alone is not tshuva. That's just Azivas Achet. How you relate to the Azivas Achet afterwards really is the question of whether you're doing tshuva gemurah.
So which thing was it?
In other words, the Chizik Lev is never doing anything. That's what the Rambam is trying to explain. The when we say Vaychazek Lev Paro, Hashem is Lev Paro, doesn't mean God is giving him an idea and animating him like a puppet. It means to say that it's just a prevention of tshuva. That's the way the Rambam learns. Okay, so that's like the Ran also learns that way. But the point is that he had to have an idea. He had to be back in. He had to be in his rishus. And then the chizuk lev would prevent him from getting out of it. So tshuva requires aziva sechet and then acharata. So for the first 9 makos, it was withheld from him even just the aziva sechet. The 10th mako, he was allowed to have aziva sechet, but it was set up in a way that he would never have charata. And once he let them go, and then it was presented to him that there's an opportunity to get them back, and there's an idea that maybe they're vulnerable, and that they're susceptible to the Baal Tzifon, and then that itself prevented the charata, and it allowed him to have the idea of chasing after them.
So is the
and then he was prevented from getting out of that mindset, because it says Vayugad Lemelech. What does it say? It says the Omar Paro Livnei Yisrael. Paro will say about the Jews, Nevuchim Heim Baaretz. That represents already a lack of charata. That represents now a regret on Azivas Achet. And then it's v'chizakti eslev paro v'radav acharayam. And then on that mindset, I'll prevent him from rethinking this whole idea of regretting his azivas achet.
So you mean when Vayehafech was his charata on the azivas achet?
That's right.
And then v'chizakti is step two.
Step two, because apparently rushing into the face, like the Ran says, rushing into the face of Kriyas Yamsuf is pretty crazy. That would require so he says that's chizik lev, to ignore and not allow you to recalculate the idea that you have. But it doesn't give you the idea. The idea had to be there. The mindset had to be there. All right. Why did he have that last opportunity? I think that's like the Ran says. I mean, I think you got to stay like the Ran, that there was an idea of mida keneged mida, that the retribution should be done in the yam. And that should be the his punishment. That was the din. The din was they should be destroyed by Yam. Birishus. So
the overall purpose would really be the onesh, but it worked out in a way that for the tenth market you would at least be allowed to be over the
chayv. That's right, because that's right. That was right. That's what I'm trying to explain. That when the Ram says, when the Rambam says hardening his heart is to prevent him from doing tshuva, so that, and that would imply that letting them go is tshuva, saying that's not, that's what I'm trying to answer. Letting them go would have been one step of tshuva. But, so in the sense, that's true, but there's more to tshuva than just azivas achet. So in the end, it's true, he was allowed azivas achet, but there still was a chizik lev in terms of the charata.